You're listening to Radio Diaries. This is Joe, and I have some exciting news from the Radiotopia family. Ear Hustle is back with a new season. Hosts Nigel Poor and Earlonne Woods are bringing you unique, surprising stories from four California prisons. This season, they have some truly interesting perspectives. You'll hear from people who are so comfortable in prison that they no longer want to be free. And you'll hear from mothers of inmates about the complicated reality of having adult children in prison. The show is full of candid interviews and thought-provoking conversations, and it just keeps getting better. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts and at earhustlesq.com. This episode of Radio Diaries is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. We also have support from Indeed. Finding new hires shouldn't feel like a second job, and that's why Indeed only matches you with quality candidates that fit your job description. Indeed makes hiring more organized. You can screen, message, and schedule interviews with candidates all in one place. So try it out. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/diaries. Just go to Indeed.com/diaries right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Radiotopia.
From PRX.
From PRX's Radiotopia, this is Radio Diaries. I'm Joe Richman. We're starting off today with my favorite political ad ever. It was 2008, back when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were fighting for the Democratic nomination. Also in that race was a former senator from Alaska named Mike Gravel. If you've never heard of him, you're not alone. To try to get some attention, Gravel did what candidates do. He made a TV spot. But this one was different. It's pretty quiet, so let me describe what's happening here. In the background, there's a small park with a lake. You can hear some wind noise and some traffic in the distance. In the foreground, a white-haired Mike Gravel is staring directly into the camera. He has kind of a stern look on his face. Every once in a while, it looks like he's about to open his mouth to speak, but he doesn't. He just continues to stare. After 20 seconds, a woman walks by in the background. After 55 seconds, you can hear some geese fly overhead. And all this time, Mike Gravel keeps staring silently into the camera. Then finally, at the 1:10 mark, just when you're not sure you can take it any longer, something happens. Gravel turns away from the camera and walks toward the lake. A few feet from the water's edge, he stops to pick up a large rock. It's big, so he has to use both hands. And then he gives the rock a heave. Gravel dusts off his hands, turns away from the lake, and his campaign website appears on the screen. And then he walks off into the distance for another 1:22.
It wasn't my idea, in point of fact. They said, just stand in front of the camera and stare at it for a minute and then pick up the rock and throw it in the water and then walk down the path. And I felt a little foolish.
That's Mike Gravel. Not only was the ad not his idea, it wasn't even his campaign's idea. Gravel had little to no money to run a presidential campaign. So when two young filmmakers approached him and offered to make him an ad for free, Gravel was game. And he didn't really give the ad much thought until the press started calling.
The reaction to the rock in the water was bafflement. The pundits, the mainstream media, they were just baffled by it.
Gravel started getting interview requests from MSNBC, ABC, The New York Times. The ad made it onto The Daily Show's Moment of Zen. And everyone was asking the same question. What does it mean? That's exactly what I wanted to know, too. But when I interviewed Mike Gravel, his answer wasn't exactly what I expected. He told me he didn't know what the ad meant either. It wasn't his idea, after all. But with all the reporters calling, he realized he better come up with a message. So he did.
That ad represents the ripple effect you know, the ripples that affect other people in their lives based upon what you've done.
Gravel went on to say that the ad was, quote, a metaphor of an ordinary citizen who acts in an unusual and extraordinary way. In the end, Mike Gravel's 2008 political ad didn't help him get many votes. He finally dropped out with less than 1%. But what Gravel did do is create what is possibly the most surreal campaign ad in the history of presidential politics. He made a work of political performance art, which, by the way, you can still watch on YouTube. It has more than 1 million views.
And I'm still surprised, because it still has legs.
Gravel made one more ad in his 2008 campaign for president. In this one, he's seen walking silently through the woods, collecting twigs. He lights a campfire, the camera zooms in on the flames, and we watch it burn for another 7 minutes. 8 years later, after watching Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump duke it out, I think we could all agree that Mike Gravel was onto something. He was a politician who knew when to keep quiet. This election season, our country seems more politically divided than ever. This race has been so ugly that it's been hard to imagine a time when Republicans and Democrats could agree on anything at all. So today, we're going back more than 75 years to another hard-fought election. In 1940, Franklin Delano Roosevelt squared off against Wendell Willkie. And during the election, the Republican Party, the Democrats, even the Communist Party managed to agree on one thing, a song. It was an unlikely hit. The song was a kind of folk opera sung by a black man that ran 10 minutes. But whether you were on the left or the right, the song's populist message had something for everyone. It debuted on a national radio broadcast on November 5th, 1939. Producer Ben Shapiro brings us today's story, Ballad for Americans.
My name is Fran Nathan. In 1940, I was 11, and I was growing up in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
My name is Jack Toll. I grew up in southern Michigan, a little town, Jonesville. It was a pretty small world with bigoted attitudes about, for example, people from Ohio and Indiana.
I remember hearing Ballad for Americans at my aunt and uncle's. We were all gathered. It was a big moment that we were going to hear this. That's why I remember it.
The Columbia Broadcasting System presents...
I listened to Ballad for Americans for the first time when I was 10 years old. 70 years later, I could still quote it fluently. Yeah.
One aim of this program is to discover and perform new American music. Today, we offer our first effort in that direction. Ballad for Americans and the singer, Paul Robeson.
The sky was red, thunder rumbling overhead, that King George couldn't sleep in his bed, and on that stormy morn, old Uncle Sam was born.
My name is Lisa Barg. I teach music history at McGill University. Ballad for Americans is sort of a musical pageant of American history. There's an anonymous narrator sung by Paul Robeson, and the chorus is always asking, "Who are you, mister?"
Say, will you please tell us who you are?
What's your name, buddy?
Where you going?
Who are you?
Well, I'm everybody who's nobody. I'm the nobody who's everybody.
I think he was talking about the little person. The guy in the street, the social worker, the guy who pushed the push cart.
I'm just an Irish, Negro, Jewish, Italian, French and English, Spanish, Russian, Chinese, Polish, Scotch, Hungarian, Litvak, Swedish, Finnish, Canadian, Greek and Turk and Czech and double Czech American.
My name is Morris Dickstein. My most recent book is a cultural history of the 1930s called Dancing in the Dark. Ballad for Americans presented a kind of overview of American society at a time when there were serious problems, such as lynching and racial segregation and anti-immigrant feeling.
Out of the cheating, out of the shouting, out of the murders and lynching.
Well, it was different from America the Beautiful. It was different from the Star Spangled Banner.
A marching song will come again.
It felt very good that somebody was talking about all of America, not just a few people.
And then in the final passage of the piece, he reveals his true identity.
And you know who I am.
Who are you?
America.
The people stamped and whistled and shouted bravo,
and the telephone switchboards were jammed, and bales of letters came in.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The song went into orbit, and by the following year was a very popular concert item.
We would say today the work went viral.
Welcome to the thousands of people here gathered in the auditorium of Hunter College in the city of New York. We open with a work which in one short year has been accepted as the musical expression of America and the American way of life.
Other artists recorded it, the most popular of which is Bing Crosby covered it. And he was the most popular recording artist at this time. I mean, no one could touch him.
I'm just an Irish, Negro, Jewish, Italian, French, and English, Spanish, Russian, Litvox, Swedish, Finnish, Canadian, Greek, and Turk, and Czech, and double-Czech American.
Well, you have to remember that between the time that Ballad for Americans was put on the radio in November 1939 and the spring of 1940, there was a tremendous change in world history.
My name is Susan Dunn, and I'm the author of 1940, FDR, Wilkie, Lindbergh, Hitler, The Election Amid the Storm. On June 22nd, France surrenders to Nazi Germany. It was a difficult time. And Ballad for Americans had a message of unity at a time when the nation desperately needs unity to face this Nazi menace.
And 1940 was the year of the national elections.
Ballad for Americans was sung at the various political conventions of that year, including, very famously, the Communist Convention.
From Madison Square Garden in New York City, the Communist Party nominating convention is now in session.
As well as the Republican Convention.
We will now hear musical selection for this evening's session.
The vague patriotism and Americanism of the song was appealing across the political spectrum.
A song which has created a sensation since it was first heard over the radio just a few months ago. Ballads for America.
One of FDR's final campaign speeches in 1940 was in Boston, and this is what he said. In our own American community, we have sought to submerge all the old hatreds, all the old fears of the old world.
We are Anglo-Saxon and Latin. We're Irish and Teuton.
His speechwriters weren't afraid to borrow from pop culture.
We are America.
Ballad for Americans had quite an extensive life until the post-war period when people like Robeson were blacklisted and treated as being subversive.
It was literally ripped out from the school music books because of the blacklist.
And this was pretty much the end of the popularity of the song.
Well, looking back, it spoke to everybody and anybody who was anybody. I think that's even in the lyrics. I don't think it's that way anymore. But I have gone around singing the first few lines to my kids since they were born. When we would have thunderstorms, I would say my kids would get nervous. I'd sing, in 76 the sky was red, thunder rumbled overhead. And they would get hysterical laughing. But they weren't afraid of thunder after that.
In 76 the sky was red, thunder rumbling overhead.
The song Ballad for Americans was composed by Earl Robinson, with lyrics by John Latouche. Special thanks to Rita Post, Elaine Finsilver, and all the voices in our story.
Uncle Sam was
Ballad for Americans was produced by Ben Shapiro and edited by Deborah George, with help from Sarah K. Kramer, Nellie Gillis, and myself. Radio Diaries is part of the Radiotopia Network from PRX. We have support from MailChimp, the Knight Foundation, and listeners like you. Now you can just kick back, relax, and listen to more of your favorite podcasts at radiotopia.fm. I'm Joe Richmond of Radio Diaries. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia.